This is the Wrestling Pulsecast. Please call 818-532-9786 with any questions or comments for your host throughout the show.
That's right, this is the Wrestling Pulsecast. I want to apologize for a little bit of a delay. I think we had a confusion on who was hosting tonight. So I just called in, and we are now up and running with myself, Matt Herrick, and Justin Soronka. How are you doing today, Justin? You all shoveled out yet from the latest snowstorm?
It's getting there. I mean, right now, the end of my driveway is just kind of a giant sheet of snow and ice. And there's more snow coming, not a lot of snow, but a couple inches, but just every time the thaw comes by, it gets harder. And the end of my driveway, the pile of snow is now higher than my mailbox, so I don't really have much anywhere else to put the snow. So that's my biggest problem right now, is trying to figure out where to put all this stuff. But for now, yes, I am shoveled out of my driveway.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. I live on a busy main street, so pretty much as we're shoveling or as we're plowing, there's a plow that comes by and dumps it all back. So it's always fun
For me, it's always after I'm shoveling. Like, I'll shovel and I'll go inside and I'll sit down, and then a half hour later the plow will come by and I'll just be like, damn it, I have to go back out there to get
I still think that's a little bit better than actually moving the snow and then standing there and watching it get pushed right back onto your driveway. That's a little frustrating, and you really want to start throwing stuff at the plow drivers as they drive by. But yeah, it's pretty cold out here in the Northeast right now, and it seems like it's staying pretty cool in the WWE as well. There's not a lot going on. There's some things that seem to be in the works that are very confusing, especially after Monday's Raw. We talked about it a little bit about how it looked like Daniel Bryan might be working his way into a main event scene, and there might be a matchup fast lane where it was him or Rollins or somebody getting in there and having a match with Roman Reigns to try to carry him over into WrestleMania. And that's happening now. Besides that, it just seems like things are being pinned together and almost penciled in certain places. We've seen an IC title feud start to develop between Dean Ambrose and Bad News Barrett. We're seeing a tag team now with Dolph Ziggler and Ryback. We saw them tag on Thursday night SmackDown, and there were a backstage video and a couple photos showing that they might actually be a semi-regular tag team. We're getting more teases into the Bray Wyatt Undertaker feud that seems to be happening. And we're looking at Seth Rollins and Randy Orton at WrestleMania, which isn't too big of a surprise. It's a surprise in the fact that they're waiting this long to get it off the ground, and it looks like now it won't even be talked about until really after Fastlane, where it looks like Randy Orton might get involved in Reigns' match or something of that nature. Monday Night Raw was a slow show. I know I didn't make it all the way through my first time around. I had to go back and watch it again. And so how I feel about it yet. I don't really see the point of putting Reigns and Bryan together and having a match at Fastlane. I think the one thing it did do was make Roman Reigns a lot more comfortable on the mic. I think we saw a much more relaxed, a much more natural, and a much more confident Roman Reigns on Monday than we've seen since this babyface push. You were able to see him just be the badass and not have to speak so much. And when he did, just be intimidating. So that was a nice little surprise coming forward on Monday, when pretty much every week we're just watching it and hoping that he gets better. While this was a step back and was back to his previous persona, it's a much more comfortable persona, and one that I think WWE needs to push for him to show more on television. Now, if this is only because Daniel Bryan is in the picture and now he feels like a lot of the weight is off his shoulders, that's great. But what's going to happen when he is the only one going forward and he is the one that has to carry the ball? Is he still trustworthy enough to put the title on him or to put a main event program on him? And can he push it and actually step up and not have somebody have to carry him or somebody have to take the majority of the spotlight while he just kind of hangs in the background? I don't know how I feel about it going forward. Right now, it looks like it's a positive thing for him, getting him more comfortable in the main event scene. But I don't know what it's looking like going forward and whether or not this Brian Roman Reigns feud is really worth it when it comes to the future of Roman Reigns.
I kind of feel the same way. I mean, I thought, first of all, I thought Raw, at least from a wrestling standpoint, with the actual matches that are on the show, was a very good show. I mean, we got Daniel Bryan versus Seth Rollins. There was a good Cesaro versus, I believe it was Jimmy Uso match on there. Dolph Ziggler, Bray Wyatt was good. Even Ryback and Luke Harper, I thought, had a decent match on there. So I enjoyed the three-hour Raw this time because of the wrestling that was actually going on there. As far as the storyline goes with Roman Reigns, I'm not the biggest fan in agreement of it because, like we kind of mentioned, Daniel Bryan is still the fan favorite. He's the guy that a lot of people still want to see in the main event of WrestleMania. And now here we are with Fastlane coming up, and you got Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns with the shot of facing Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania on the line. And everybody, or I shouldn't say everybody, I would say probably the majority of the audience is going to want to see Daniel Bryan win that match. And if Roman Reigns comes out on top again and wins and beats Daniel Bryan, I think there's actually going to be more resentment from the fans toward Reigns than there was before and even after the Royal Rumble, because you're giving the fans this false sense of hope that maybe, just possibly, Daniel Bryan will find his way into the WrestleMania main event once again this year. And now there's talk even again of possibly making it a triple threat match with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns both fighting Brock Lesnar. And to me, that is just another bad idea. I think that if you want Roman Reigns to succeed, then stick to your guns and don't change plans, or don't even do that and go with Daniel Bryan again in the first place if you were expecting this kind of backlash from the audience, but for some reason thought it would just go away again. I mean, compared to last year, at least this year, Roman Reigns is a guy who's going to be around, presumably, for the next 5 to 10 years and is going to be a cornerstone of your company, whether people like to admit it or not. You know, give him the chance, give him the ball, see if he can run with it. I personally still don't think he's ready for it, but if the WWE feels that way, then go with it. If they put Daniel Bryan in this title match, to me, it maybe makes Roman Reigns feel less confident in himself. Maybe WWE starts to question whether or not they actually see Roman Reigns as being the next heir apparent to John Cena, and it just kind of scrambles things up even more. And not only that, as a result of everything that happened this Monday on Raw, the second year in a row, the Royal Rumble just kind of is written off and made it seem like it's not important anymore. I mean, they kind of screwed up with Batista last year, and they had to put Daniel Bryan in. Now, here this year, you know, Roman Reigns, you can make the argument, there's an argument obviously both ways, that he deserves it or not, but once again, he has to put his Royal Rumble shot on the line. So for the second year in a row, it seems like winning the Royal Rumble means absolutely nothing to the person that wins it, and it makes it seem like going into next year, what's going to make people think that it's not going to happen for a third year in a row? And are we going to get now, for some reason, every single year where if Daniel Bryan doesn't win the Royal Rumble or get into the title match, it's going to be a letdown? Or if they call up Sami Zayn and Sami Zayn catches all this momentum and he doesn't win, it's going to be the same thing every year. Basically, when is the WWE going to actually learn from their mistakes of previous years and have the right guy, or at least the guy that in the fans' minds should win, win? So I'm not in the biggest of agreement of this kind of like little stipulation here. I wish they would just make it a one-on-one match, whether it be Bryan or Reigns, and go with it from there. But I just think giving the fans this false sense of hope that Daniel Bryan can actually win and get in a one-on-one match at WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar will, and if they end up having Reigns just win and go on having it be Reigns-Lesnar at WrestleMania, it's going to make the fans resent and hate Reigns even more than they already do.
I think this is where you see the need for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. And not so much the fact that it's another pay-per-view, because we are getting that second pay-per-view or that pay-per-view in between WrestleMania and Royal Rumble. But a pay-per-view like the Elimination Chamber, where there was a spot in WrestleMania on the line, and you knew that going into the pay-per-view, and you knew that going into the year and into WrestleMania season. You knew that there was going to be a change one way or another, whether the WWE champion was going to change, whether the number one contender was going to change. Yeah, you had two titles, but I think 99% of the time you had two Elimination Chamber matches. So you could have a title swap at the February pay-per-view. You could have an entirely different main event going into WrestleMania than you thought in January. And this is where they're able to have that audible situation compared to now, where they have to actually create a matchup to put in there for a random brandless pay-per-view that nobody really knows, nobody really understands, and there's no gimmick to it. By having this, you have to create something out of nothing compared to the Elimination Chamber, which was already built in and was already had the stipulation and had the matchup and had everything ready to go before you even came close to the pay-per-view on the calendar.
Yeah, I agree. And that's part of the reason why I wouldn't even mind not having a pay-per-view in between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, because you can just use that. I mean,
But that's where you're going to have a problem, because they need that time to have an audible. They need that time to, when they have a situation like this, where all of a sudden they have to change plans, or they have to boost up their number one contender, or they have an injury. Or like the year that Chris Jericho won the title, and it was because they had to do Undertaker Shawn Michaels, and Undertaker had to lose the belt. They had to throw that audible in there of getting Jericho the belt before they got to Rumble. It's there. They were able to actually make these changes and be able to book ahead of time and go with it, compared to now where it's just, oh, shit, we have the pay-per-view. This isn't working. Let's manufacture a storyline and try to create something so it fits into this mold and we can make it work for us. Right now, it's not working for them.
Yeah, I agree. I personally, if there was an Elimination Chamber now, I would love to see somebody like Brock Lesnar defend the title in there, because I think as far as Lesnar's persona goes, I just would rather see him be in the Elimination Chamber and just go through five other guys and win the championship. And I think personally, I think me and you kind of both agree on this, that in the long run, no matter, well, I shouldn't say no matter, maybe if Roman Reigns ends up winning, but if it ends up being the title at WrestleMania, I think we both kind of agree that within the next day or the next month, we planned on seeing Seth Rollins cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase, and he just happens to be the big wild card in this entire situation, because time, I mean, obviously he still has a few months, and the Money in the Bank was July, so there's still time for him to cash in, but it's getting closer and closer, and we just seem to think that once the title is finally off Brock Lesnar, Rollins is going to end up cashing in his briefcase, whether it be at WrestleMania or whether it be the next night on Raw, one of those two scenarios, or maybe even in the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. I think no matter what the result is, Rollins is going to end up being the WWE World Heavyweight Champion within a month or two for WrestleMania, and then you'll go with better storyline of guys like Reigns and Bryan chasing the heel champion, because that usually ends up, or when it should end up in most wrestling scenarios, being the better storyline, rather than having face the John Cena-like face being dominant on top and overcoming the odds all the time. Maybe then if you have Rollins cash in on Reigns, you build sympathy for Reigns, and the crowd actually tries to get behind him even more, get behind him more than he already is, and then Reigns builds up momentum going on to a title win. So obviously, it's not
what I'm worried about. What I'm worried about now with Bryan jumping into this picture now, which I'm fine if he's in the WWE Championship picture, that's fine. But what I'm looking at now is he might be the scapegoat for Seth Rollins. They might be looking at, well, last year they gave him his WrestleMania moment. He was able to come in, be Triple H, and then he won the Triple Threat match and was able to pose his belts and get that huge moment. What if you see a repeat of it this year, and instead Rollins comes in and cashes in on him, walks away with the championship? Now you have him cashing in on Bryan, getting him over as a heel, an ultimate heel at WrestleMania, but also he's now the champion, facing Brian, able to get him a month or two of solid championship wins before moving on to Reigns and then having a Roman Reigns-Seth Rollins match. I'm afraid of that, because then you're looking at Brian as really the one to put over your new champion without really getting much momentum. I mean, the guy has only had really a month of being a WWE champion, but yet he's looked at as this main event guy. I don't know if having him lose the title twice that quickly after gaining it is going to cost him in the long run. I mean, we've already seen that kind of with Dolph Ziggler. He's technically, I think, a two-time world champion, but yet nobody realizes that, and nobody can reference that. Same thing with Jack Swagger. Jack Swagger was a world heavyweight champion, and he was a champion for a good 2-3 months, and yet now nobody even talks about that. I'm afraid that might happen with Bryan. I mean, there's only so much you can put on the fans, and at some point, they're just going to start backing somebody new because they're sick of their champion always losing.
And I think that's part of the problem. This is where it goes back to the booking of the WWE. I mean, if you want to do a comparison scenario here and look at something, if you want to bring in something like UFC into the mix, your champion gets injured out for an extended period of time. What do they normally do? They crown an interim champion, and then when the original champion is healthy and ready to go, he comes back and gets the first title shot. Now, I'm not saying Lesnar should have been used the term interim champion, but if you want to play it up similarly, Ryan is forced to give up the title because of an injury. Lesnar comes in, or first Cena comes in and wins the title. Then Lesnar comes in, but Brian should have gotten an automatic rematch the second he was fully cleared to wrestle and get the title shot, which would have presumably been the Royal Rumble. And I think that WWE could have just avoided this whole situation if they would have done that right away. And you bring back Daniel Bryan like they did in December, and have him sit, and instead of announcing Cena Lesnar for the third time and having to change that from Cena Lesnar to Cena Lesnar Rollins, you come in and say, okay, you know, maybe somebody could have done this before the Authority was brought back in power, and you could have brought Daniel Bryan back and said, hey, this guy lost or was stripped of his title, never won it back. He will get the shot at the Royal Rumble against Brock Lesnar. And you know what? You go out there, you let them have a 20-minute match. I'm sure Bryan and Lesnar could have worked a very good 20-minute match. You'd have lose clean, or presumably lose clean to Lesnar, or maybe have the Authority help out, and then you can go back if you want to the Bryan Authority storyline, and then there would have been less of a backlash on Roman Reigns from winning the Royal Rumble if the WWE just would have given Bryan the title right away and then maybe moved on to something else at WrestleMania. At least that's what I think would have happened, that there would have been less backlash on Roman Reigns had they just given Bryan the title shot at the Royal Rumble right when he came back.
Would it have been, or I mean, it just seems like now people are booing the booze. I wrote an article about it. I think it went live today on Inside Pulse and it's been on HBCWrestling.com just about kayfabe and the fact that we're too much into pro wrestling and people know too much about what's going on. Like, I want to be able to just watch the TV show and be excited for what's happening on television. I'm a big fan of Walking Dead, a show in particular. I didn't see it last night, but I woke up this morning at 7 o'clock in the morning to watch it. I didn't look at my email. I didn't look online. I didn't look anywhere because I didn't want to know what happened. I'm glad I didn't because it was a big episode. So what if, like, just something like that and WWE, or to say the Walking Dead writers, post it on their official website? If I went there every day and they just wrote something like, oh, so-and-so dies, or so-and-so leaves the group, they're going on to this show, see how it happens. I'd be pissed. I'd be extremely pissed off because I would want to be surprised and see that happen on the show. WWE, they want to call themselves a television show and entertainment, and the fact that they say they compete with shows like The Walking Dead, they go onto their own website and reveal what's happening. So if you go on their website right now, they reveal that Rikishi is the next inductee into the Hall of Fame. Okay, granted, that's not storyline driven, but still, that's something where a couple of years ago, people were sitting around like, oh my God, who's going into the Hall of Fame next? this could be huge. Who is it going to be? I don't know. Is it going to be Lashley this year? Is it going to be Hogan? What's going on? And instead, they're revealing it on Twitter. They're putting it on their main page. They put it on Facebook. They're putting it everywhere. Like something maybe a lot of fans didn't want to see and just wanted to see on Raw, they can't get away from. And it's becoming too oversaturated. There needs to be a break. You don't have to have an interview with your executive vice president on the 1 month that your network is free. People want me to watch the WWE Network, and they want to subscribe to it for other reasons. Okay, if you're giving it away for free and people are just trying it out, why are you giving away something that's that insider and that just newsworthy and that much of a look behind the curtain to the biggest audience you possibly can? I mean, at least if it was just still a podcast, people would have to find the podcast. It's on the WWE Network. And when it was on the network, it's on.com. It's released in press releases. The quotes are everywhere. So what's really the point of them looking or them thinking that fans aren't going to know what's going on? Triple H said that it's weird because they fans know everything that's going on every minute of the day, and they sometimes know things before the performers do themselves. Well, yeah, you're feeding into that mentality, and you're feeding into this beat that is social networking and a wrestling blog. I mean, well, not like ours. Ours, we write original material, but like entertainment blogs and different dirt sheets that just thrive under this situation. It's getting to be ridiculous.
Yeah, and not only that, I'm kind of glad they stopped their text messaging services, because I know people that would get their text message, that would get signed up for the WWE text messaging services. And, like, I can remember one time specifically, Heather, who used to be on the show, she was working and couldn't watch the NXT special. I wanted to wait till after, and she got home from work to watch it. And the WWE sent out a text message saying, you know, I think it was the I think it was the Fatal 4-Way when Adrian Neville retained the title. And she's just like, why would you send out a text message spoiling the result of a show for some people that you know don't watch it on the network or have other things to do and can't watch it till the next day or later on that night? No, I agree with you. The WWE is trying to play in more and more, it seems like, to the internet wrestling community, like you said with that interview. Why give it away for free when, you know, you should be paying $9.99 a month to see that type of interview, but instead they're trying to get people to go to the network, and then when they have them signed up and you have to pay the $9.99 a month, they don't give you anything, which is just ridiculous to me. I mean, they need more original content worth paying $9.99 for. I mean, there's only so many Saturday Night Main Events and old ECWs and old pay-per-view shows that I can watch. I want more original content like that WWE 24 special that aired, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, about WrestleMania 30. That is what I want to see on the network. But instead, they're bunny lines. They're like, here's a free month. Here's a Triple H interview to get you excited. Okay, well, then what's going to happen when I have to start paying? Oh, I get WrestleMania and this wrestling pay-per-views for free? No, they need to start deciding what they want to give out for free and what they want to have people pay for. And they need to start deciding, like you said, Matt, whether or not they want to go all in and play into the internet crowd and talk about all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, or if they want to go back just being the wrestling company and not talk about stuff that goes on, like with CM Punk backstage or the booking of NXT and all of those different kinds of things.
Yeah, WWE 24 is good in the fact that it all takes place. It happened almost a year after the event. So you're not involved with the storylines anymore. You're not looking at something that is happening on television or something that can be spoiled or something that the magic can be taken out of. You're looking at something that you enjoyed, you watched, you remembered fondly, and now you get a kind of behind-the-scenes look at what went into making that. That's like getting a movie and watching the behind-the-scenes documentary that comes with it. It's part of being entertainment now, and it's part of the culture's fascination with being behind-the-scenes look at stuff they love to watch and stuff they're entertained by. That's fine. But when you're producing different television shows that are talking about and discussing and actually tearing apart or tearing open stories and moments and things that are happening in today's environment and on today's, like, today's episode or today's season, whatever you want to call it, you're running into a very, very dicey situation and something that I think a lot of fans don't want. I mean, there's that, they made the joke about the canceled WWE Network and whatever it may be. I don't think that the WWE Network is the issue. There's a very, very small amount of networking and of programming that is a problem. It's more when you look at their official Twitter site, their Instagram, their Facebook, their own WWE.com. It's their employees and it's their workforce that thinks that the fans want to know everything the very second it happens. And yes, there are a lot of fans that want to know that. And I understand the WWE wanting to get the jump over dirt sheets and whatever it may be. But WWE doesn't get enough traffic on their website from their own material and whatever they have on the website that they need to start spoiling their own shows and their own products. They really need to take traffic and hits away from other websites because they need to be the ones kind of take away some of the enjoyment from some of their fans. It doesn't make sense to me. They're a multi-million-dollar company that doesn't need another 2,000 hits that are going to happen before Raw. That is not true, and it's a very sad state. And it's a very young outlook. Whoever is pushing for this has a very young social media, instant gratification outlook at the world of wrestling. And now I'm sounding extremely old when I'm talking about this. Now, I'm only 32 years old. Yes, I'm somewhat old. I'm kind of old for wrestling nowadays. Not a lot of people live that cover wrestling were here before the Attitude Era. A lot of people picked it up around there. But when you look at pro wrestling, even back to the Attitude Era, people were searching for news, but we were searching for news that pertained to the online story. We weren't looking for, oh, who are they pushing now? Or the fact that, oh my God, they're pushing The Rock. Why the fuck would they push The Rock? We want to cheer for Steve Austin instead, or we want a chance to cheer for Mankind. No, they booed The Rock because they didn't like him on screen. They weren't booing him because he was the next chosen guy to get this huge push. He didn't get a huge push. He was the Intercontinental Champion. Yeah, the WWE would like to tell you differently. They like to say they did strap the WrestleMania rocket to him like they did Roman Reigns. But they didn't. They gave him an Intercontinental Championship win over Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And this was before Triple H was Triple H. He was just Hunter. He had multiple title reigns. So a win over him was something, but it wasn't anything too spectacular. He was Intercontinental Champion. Yeah, he won at Survivor Series. He wasn't winning the Royal Rumble and going on to WrestleMania to fight for the championship. He didn't wrestle for the WWE Championship until he was over. So it's a very different situation. We were looking back then, we were looking for who was jumping ship, who was coming from WCW to WWE or vice versa. We wanted to know, oh, Chris Benoit is coming to WWE. Oh, my God, who is he going to wrestle? Chris Jericho is coming. Oh, I wonder who they pit him up against. And then it's like, oh, my God, they pit him up against The Rock. We're not looking at backstage like, oh, who decided he was going to go against The Rock? Who put him that high up on a pedestal? No. We were just like, oh, my God, this is amazing. I wonder what they're going to do next week if he interrupts The Rock this week. So there's a big difference between now and then. And, yes, the media is much more available. The news is much more readily available to people. But that doesn't mean that we need it. We don't need to know all this stuff. We don't need to see it on our phones, on our tablets, online, on our personal Facebook pages, on Twitter, on things you look at nowadays. We can make it so we have to search out this information. Don't blast it in front of our face so we can't look away.
Yeah, I agree. And I completely agree with your assessment of what it was like being an internet fan in the early 2000s, where you're talking about, like you said, people booed The Rock because they hated him. And they're not booing, not like today when they're booing Roman Reigns because, oh, I read online that they're going to push him, and I want my guy, I want Daniel Bryan, I want Dean Ambrose, Cesaro. And I've said this before on the show, I know I've said it numerous times, is that, you know, these same people who are booing Roman Reigns being chosen as the next guy are the same people who boo all the time or go online and complain saying that, I'm so sick of seeing John Cena in the main event of WrestleMania. I don't want to see him hold the title anymore. Well, here we go. Here we now have Roman Reigns being ready to, you know, get a push, whether he deserves it or not. He's finally, the WWE is finally pushing somebody new, a new top guy, but it's because he's not the internet's guy or not their favorite or not somebody who's better in the ring. They immediately crap on it and don't want to see it. Now, part of that goes back to the WWE because I said, as I said in my column this past that I wrote this past weekend, that it seems like they're trying to push Roman Reigns to be like John Cena and be everything almost as John Cena's character is, when they should be pushing Roman Reigns, somebody as like a Goldberg-type character, where you keep his promo short, you don't have him pretty much sell for anybody in the ring, you have all of his moves be impactful and make it look strong, but instead they're turning him more into somebody like John Cena is today, trying to give him some lame and corny jokes at times when it should be like you said on Raw this past Monday, where it's short, he's not talking a lot, but his words are somewhat impactful and actually seem like they have a meaning. So that goes back to the WWE a little bit. But at the same time, like I said, here we are with a new guy being pushed to the top, being given an opportunity, but because he's the WWE guy that they chose and not the internet wrestling communities of the people that read online guy, they have a problem with it. And it's going to be an endless cycle going on from here on out until, you know, finally we get the Dean Ambroses and the Cesaros and Dolph Ziggler being the guys that are on the top so these people stop complaining. And even then, people will still complain because they'll screw something up. But I absolutely agree with it being such a big difference between, you know, early internet days where you just, like you said, you go online, you saw who you wanted to know who was going to be the next person to jump ship or who was going to be feuding with who next. Not, oh, well, this guy's being pushed, so I want to boo him. I 100% completely agree with that.
Yeah, it's just becoming, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it anymore. It's too much to handle, and when it's filtering on the television constantly and it's being thrown in people's faces and you can't suspend your disbelief anymore because nothing seems like entertainment anymore. It just seems like they're airing their dirty laundry on television. It's been a long time since reality TV was at its zenith. It's become a rather passé now, and yeah, there's a couple shows out there that are still very popular, but just because Total Divas is popular doesn't mean I need to see every single thing that the WWE wrestlers are doing, and even if we're seeing what they're doing, I don't need to see how it's affecting their job and why, like, their job performances are basically part of the script of their television show. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't feel right, and I don't understand why they keep doing it. But moving on from there, move on a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about Raw and where they seem to be going into WrestleMania. Another big story another strong story that came out of Monday Night Raw, and it seems to be where WWE is going for one of their top mid card acts is Dean Ambrose challenging Wade Barrett. But bad news for the Intercontinental Championship. So, while it may come out of nowhere, I like Ambrose's promo. It was a little insider in how he was talking about going to WWE offices and seeing the wall, and it's the champion wall, and Austin and Rock, and giant pictures of basically WWE biggest stars. And What's funny is that it's on the main corporate level where visitors aren't allowed. So basically that wall is just for Vince McMahon to walk by and be like, oh, look at all these people we meet. But besides that, it is up there. And if you had seen Beyond the Mat, you saw Draws walking by it, or if you've seen Tough Enough, you saw a couple of seasons they walked by it to get to Vince's office. It's the main hallway to get to. It's just a wall basically with their top stars on it. But you see some of the biggest stars, and you say he saw the IC champions, and he wants his face up there with all of them. And that part made sense. I would have liked it a little bit more if he talked about how not only that he beat him a couple weeks ago, but maybe he beat him a few times, or maybe I've beaten these other people, and now I'm going to beat you. Something a little bit more visual for people to go back and remember or go back and watch if they wanted to watch it. But I still think it's a good match for him. I think this will be an interesting match for the two of them at Fastlane. I think this will be a good setup to see if they can have a WrestleMania match. I really don't know their chemistry. I remember their match together, but I don't remember it being very good. I don't remember it being bad. I remember it falling kind of in the middle. So I don't know how it's going to play out. I'm glad that it's going to take place on the B show before WrestleMania, so maybe we won't get a WrestleMania dud and they can go a different direction. This is a title that I would love to see in a triple threat match or a fatal four-way match. I think the IC Championship is made for something like that. Yeah, I love one-on-one encounters with it, but this is an era of pro wrestling where the WWE needs to showcase how many guys they have on the verge of being WWE champions. And by showcasing a bunch of them in an IC title match or a bunch of them in a US title match, you're going to get a much better fan reaction. Obviously, you're not going to do that with the U.S. Championship unless you have Rusev drop the title somewhere between now and WrestleMania. But I think you're going to get that a little bit more with the IC title match. I think they want to put more people on the show, and I think this is a good way to do it. I like the Ambrose Barrett feud if they stick with that, but I'm interested to see how well they work together first. How do you see this as a – do you see this as a good path for Dean Ambrose, or do you see this as kind of taking a step back before trying to get into that main event picture once again?
I think it's a good stopgap for Dean Ambrose. I think that it's better than him doing nothing. I mean, I remember after his feud with Bray Wyatt, I was sitting there thinking, you know, what can they do with Dean Ambrose next? And I think we talked about it on the show where you just really couldn't come up with anything that for him to do. And now I think this is a nice little either mini feud or even a long-term feud with him going forward. It makes somebody – Dean Ambrose is a guy who is over with the fans still. And even Ben Barrett, he hasn't been on TV as much, but he's also a guy who gets a decent reaction from the fans. And to have two guys getting reactions like that from the audience going fighting over the Intercontinental title, I think is going to be a positive for the title, first of all. And I think these two will end up working well together. I mean, Barrett's been around long. Barrett and Ambrose have both been around the wrestling business long enough that I think they'll be able to work a good match. They're both good workers in the ring. I'd like to see how the actual feud or storyline, if you want to call it that, develops. I mean, like Ambrose said, he beat him a couple weeks ago, but I kind of want to see him maybe put a little more story to it going forward, especially if you want to have a match at Fastlane and continue it into WrestleMania. And I think that, like you said, you talked about this match, maybe you want to see a triple threat or a fatal four-way. I think that if you don't want to do a Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania, that the Intercontinental title could be the perfect kind of title or match you could have to have a fatal four-way type ladder match at WrestleMania. We don't really see that many ladder matches, it seems like, now. Well, outside of CLC, I think because of CLC, but I think like a match at WrestleMania with people like, you know, Ambrose, Wade Barrett, Luke Harper, and I know he's in a tag team now with Ryback, but even like a Dolph Ziggler, you put those guys in a fatal four-way ladder match going into WrestleMania and have the Intercontinental title on the line. And then you see those guys presumably go out there and risk and hit each other with a ladder and make it seem like they're actually wanting to win this title. I think it would do wonders for everybody involved in the match and to help build the prestige of the Intercontinental title back up in the eyes of the fans, because that's a title that's really, really lost some of its luster over the last few years, even going back before that. I mean, you go back to the 90s and you see how Intercontinental title was treated pretty much like it's at times that it was almost equal to the WWF title, and now it's barely on TV half the time. So I'd like to see them maybe try to build this back up going forward. If you put a guy like Ambrose in an Intercontinental title feud, I think that helps out Ambrose and the title. I still think down the line, Ambrose is going to be a main event player in the company, like maybe by the end of the year. But I think for now, especially when it looks like he had nothing going for him, this is a nice little mini feud stopgap for him going into WrestleMania, and presumably gives him either a singles match, or if they want to make it a triple threat or a fatal four way match, something better than the Andre the Giant Battle Royal at WrestleMania.
And I would be fine with the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I think that's a nice little showcase and a fun little spot at WrestleMania. I just think a more focused spotlight on some of their best upper mid carders would be better for some of the guys. But yeah, most of the roster on the show, I think Andre the Giant Battle Royal is a fantastic idea.
I like it only, but I think last year I liked it going into the show, but to see what ended up happening with Cesaro afterwards, it kind of made me hesitant a little bit going into this year's show. I would, like you said, I'd like seeing everybody get an actual WrestleMania payday or a match. Everybody gets on the show and that works. But just seeing what ended up happening afterward and how they screwed up Cesaro after that, it makes me a little hesitant to see if they would do anything with the winner of the match afterwards, after this coming WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's the one thing that was a little dicey, I'd say. It would be interesting. I do like I said, I like the idea of Battle Royal. I think it adds a little bit of nostalgia to the event. But yeah, they should do something with the guy afterwards instead of just kind of riding the holidays. we have like two more stories coming out of Raw or coming out of the Classic Week Wrestling. One was we talked about the Triple H interview for the most part. Was there anything else in that podcast that you wanted to talk about? Was there anything that was kind of blatant out there? I think the biggest thing for me was just that talk about how wrestling used to be and how it is now, when they're being so unbelievably holding an unbelievable double standard and saying that the fans can see too much into what's going on daily, but yet they're the ones holding a podcast like that for their network. What else did you see from that interview that surprised you? Were there any other revelations that you weren't expecting?
I think, to me, actually, the biggest surprise that I heard was at the very end of the interview when Triple H talking to, you know, Steve Austin. I think the question he posted him was, there anything you want to change about the current TV product or something along those lines? And he immediately pretty much replied with, I wish Raw could go back down to 2 hours. And for somebody in as high of a position that Triple H is in the company to say something like that just kind of, you know, surprised me. I mean, Vince McMahon would tell you that, hey, I love 3 hour Raw, you know, it gives us more TV time for the talent, and it'll try to, he would try to talk it up, but Triple H just came right out and said, you know, 2 hours is too much wrestling and it's too much time to fill 3 hours worth of show, when he said he could go back down to 2 hours and you can condense it more. That, to me, I thought was quite shocking. And like I said, pretty much for the simple fact that a guy in as high of a position in the company as he is would say something like that. Now, I know the third hour is pretty much a USA thing because they get more ad revenue from the WWE's third hour than they would a rerun that they'd probably run of, I don't know, NCIS or Raw or SVU, something like that. But, I mean, for somebody who's reviewed Raw pretty much every single week for the last 2-3 years, I can tell you writing for 3 hours can be very strenuous sometimes, very hard, especially when they're putting on a very terrible show. So I'm kind of happy that Triple H said that, hey, you know, I would like to see it go back into 2 hours. And maybe someday, somewhere down the line, when Vince McMahon sits down or passes away, which I don't think will ever happen at this point, because he just seems like a machine that just keeps running, maybe we can get Raw back down to 2 hours. But for him to come out and say that in the podcast like that, I thought, to me at least, was kind of shocking, just because of the position that he is in with the company.
See, I wasn't surprised that he said that because that interview took place on the network. If it had taken place on USA, I think that would have been a much bigger story. Because it took place on the network and took place on their own time, they can say whatever they want. And Triple H was speaking in terms of a creative writer, the fact that it's hard to fill 3 hours of Raw. It's not. There's no way that a television show should go on for 3 hours long. There's a reason why they constantly fail, and most movies are 3 hours long. If people can't hold their attention for that long, and they're not going to take 3 hours out of their night to watch a television show. I know not only do we write Raw constantly every single week, for me, I'm like, I have Mondays off, but on Tuesdays, I got to get up and go for work. I have to get up with a one-year-old and a four-year-old who want to get up at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. So staying up until 11, 11:30 at night gets tiresome very quickly. So there are times when I duck out of Raw early and I'll finish it the next day because it doesn't seem worth it. It doesn't seem like 3 hours is worth it. When you can get the gist of the show and how it's going to go within the first segment, you kind of know how Raw is going to play out. That's kind of what I did last week. I knew how Raw was going to play out, so I ducked out and watched it later. So I don't want to have that. I want to be able to look at something and be like, oh, I'm excited for Raw. It's 2 hours long, and at the end, want more. And that's where they can push you towards the WWE Network. That's where they can say you can watch more over here if you want to. But because it's being thrown in our faces and because it's like, no, you got to sit through the main event. You got to wait until 11:15 before the end of Raw. People are starting to get a little resentful of that. And creative writers are burning out even faster because they have a whole hour and 15 minutes in between that they have to fill besides just writing the beginning and the end of the show. So I wasn't too surprised that he said that. I'm glad he said it. But if it was in any other format, I don't think we would have heard it directly and heard it from him as bluntly as he said it there.
Yeah, and part of me kind of hopes that maybe if they bring back Tough Enough and it's a USA Network show that, you know, you could do from 8 until 9 or from 10 to 11, you can do Tough Enough. And then, you know, before that, or, you know, before and after, or even like you said, I kind of like your idea. I actually thought that when the network started, you would have like more of a post-show Raw kind of thing where you can do, you know, all of Raw and then, hey, to catch this or hear from, you know, the winner, blah, 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 you know, tune into the network and we can get follow-up. Kind of almost like, I mean, look what they did with the Royal Rumble, or after the Rumble's over, they have the Royal Rumble, post-show, and then we have Rusev come and interrupt the John Cena interview, and that sets up the angle for Rusev and John Cena going into Fastlane and then WrestleMania. That would have worked. That's the kind of thing I'd want to see from a post-Raw show, and if they just added a little bit more time to that, then maybe, you know, you can kick out the third hour. Wouldn't it make the third hour that much bearable, that make it, you know, bearable? So that's what I think of that. I kind of agree with what you said, that if it was like an interview in Time Magazine or, you know, for a website or a newspaper article, you probably wouldn't have heard that kind of talk. But I'm just kind of glad he said it. I also kind of found it funny when he talked about when Austin asked him about China going into the Hall of Fame and saying, I wouldn't want my daughters looking up China on the internet and seeing what he did, when you got guys in the Hall of Fame who have already been accused of almost worse stuff, I guess you want to say it. I mean, you can look at, I don't know, Jimmy Snuka being accused of murdering his girlfriend. You can look at Carlos Colon covering up Bruiser Brody's death. I think you can look up Sonny and look at all the stuff Sonny does on the internet. I'm not saying what China has done would be something that I want my kids to look up, but for him to kind of mention that, I just thought, I mean, it doesn't really have that much relevance, but I just got a laugh out of it. And you can probably go through every single Hall of Fame class and find somebody in there that has some kind of background. Yeah, you there, Matt?
Oh, you broke out. You were gone all of a sudden.
Where did I cut off?
You were finishing up talking about Sonny and how bad some of the other people in the Hall of Fame are, which perfect. It makes perfect sense. I mean, China isn't the greatest person to add to your roster, but everything she did was legal. It might be not be something you want to look at for morality and somebody to represent your company for a Be a Star campaign. But yeah, I think they would be okay with her if she did something for the industry in a more positive light. And if maybe she showed that she had her act together, instead she's just kind of disappeared. I know she's living in China now, I believe. I saw Ventura's post. She made herself a little bit more visible and showed that she does have her act together. She is clean. It can be a good ambassador for the sport. I think you might see a little bit more talk about her, but because of how she left the company and how she's currently remembered in wrestling lore, it's too much for the WWE to handle right now. We do have a caller online right now. It's from your town, your area, Coach Justin. So I don't know if this is Heather. But
don't do it. I wouldn't. It's not a caller. It's somebody that I'm getting to listen to the show who has no idea what we're talking about. It's a girl. She doesn't know what we're talking about. Me,
Josh.
You can have her. You can put her on, but I don't know if she'll be able to contribute to the call whatsoever.
Very well. I will keep her on mute unless I get told otherwise. If you do want to call in, we're about to jump into our top three hottest wrestling couples in wrestling history. Our phone number is 818-522-9786. Give that phone number a call. Give us your opinion on what's going on in the WWE right now, what you think of the main event storyline, if you hate Roman Reigns, if you love Roman Reigns, if you hate or love him, where you think Seth Rollins should be in the spot. Let us know. Our phone number is 818-522-7986. Give us a call. I'll put you in. One more thing before we move on to our top three, and that's this supposed tag team of Dolph Ziggler and Ryback. Now, Ryback is a guy who, for all intents and purposes, was fired not too long ago. He was completely off the television. If he was on television, he was on Main Event, and he was wrestling with Curtis Axel as a Ryback tag team that did absolutely nothing. They were more subject of jokes than they were of serious discussions. There was nothing to him. There is nothing anybody was really invested in him, and nobody really cared about him. And everyone pretty much said, "Okay, this guy's career is done and over with." Got a renewed push. He got pushed back up into the main event scene. They even talked about pushing him for a WWE Championship match. And all of that, it just kind of fell flat again. But yet he still pushed in as a strong babyface that in the upper mid-card section, kind of, sort of, in discussion for maybe a mid-card title, kind of wrestling former champions or champions that are on the cusp of being champions, and kind of in that gray area between a mid-card and upper mid-card guy. That being said, he's being seen now with Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler, a few months ago, was poised to be the hottest thing coming out of Survivor Series since Baby the Rock. Here's a guy who went over the entire Authority tag team. He had the Hell debut in the WWE for the very first time. He had all of this going for him. And ever since then, he's kind of been on a very, very slow climb. Now he's being teamed with this guy who can't get above a certain rung in the fans' mindset, and it's kind of almost like a lead ceiling for him, where he can't get much farther than that. Is this Dolph Ziggler, like, has he had his last shot, and now this is just kind of the best he's going to get? Or is he going to be able to come back from this at some point and get another shot at that main event status? Because right now, it's not looking very good.
Yeah, I think the problem with Dolph Ziggler is eventually, and it is right now, it's the numbers game, where there's just, as over as Dolph Ziggler is, there's just so many guys in front of him that either deserve it or are higher up in the card and are kind of younger and deserve a little bit more of a push. I mean, just look at the babyface side of things right now, where you got, you know, Dean Ambrose and Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. Obviously, you still have John Cena involved in the mix. Sheamus is apparently coming back. Who knows if he's going to be a face or a heel. You got Randy Orton, who is still a face. There's just so many guys right there in front of him that it's tough for him to kind of get the push he needs to get up to a WWE world title shot. And I think this is, I wouldn't want the second world title back, but this is kind of where you could have Dolph Ziggler, maybe if there were still two different brands and two different titles, you can have Dolph Ziggler fighting for the World Heavyweight Championship and maybe hold that for a little bit. This is where he's the kind of guy that the brand split, a brand split would help out, because you could separate like stars and put him on different shows, and Ziggler could be your number two or three babyface on whatever show you put him on. But since everything is combined right now, he's 5, 6, maybe even 7 on the list of people who would be as far as your top faces go. So I think it'll be very, very difficult for him to even snip a world title shot going forward. You know, same thing with Ryback. I mean, you watch and listen to Ryback matches, he's still over with the crowd. I mean, he gets a lot of the audience to the Feed Me More chant. I remember when he did his promo, I think it was before the Royal Rumble, where he kind of went into his injury history and talked about his love for pro wrestling. I thought that was very nice character development, but even still, Ryback's a guy who is stuck kind of where he is because there are so many people in front of him. I mean, if you want to put them together as a tag team now, I guess, you know, that's all right. They can feud with Cesaro and Tyson Kidd and the Usos, and maybe they can have a triple threat or add another team, a fatal four-way match at WrestleMania for the tag team titles. So that'll work for the short term, but I think long term, these are just two guys that are kind of going to be stuck in, I guess if you want to call it mid-card purgatory. That's where they'll be, because there's just, barring injuries to a couple of top stars, I just can't see them jumping anybody going forward. I mean, look at Ryback. He was in a feud with Rusev, and I can't even remember them having, like, a blow-off for that feud. It was just kind of, I think they maybe had one or two matches, but then it was just kind of pushed to the side after that, and he just kind of was put in the Royal Rumble, and then he's just now in a tag team with Dolph Ziggler. So I wish these guys could do more, and like I said, with a brand split and maybe a second world title, that could be something they could do, but I wouldn't want to see a second world title get brought back. So unfortunately, I think for the foreseeable future, these guys just kind of stuck where they are, and hopefully they can make this tag team work and be the best situation for them possible.
Dolph Ziggler, and especially the majority of his career, a lot of it is similar to that of Edge. And while he did have that very popular tag team in the middle, he still had that time where it was him and Vicky Guerrero, where they had a very strong mid-card act that grew into a main event level program. With Edge, though, he did have that outlet of moving over to SmackDown and having a very strong run on SmackDown. The difference was Edge got the shot, first shot, by beating John Cena for the WWE Championship. So he was able to get over first as a heel on the main show before moving over into the B show. Or, I mean, that's pretty obvious, it's the B show. But he wasn't grow more on that show, but he was already kind of a main man. Dolph Ziggler hasn't really gotten that opportunity. Yeah, he got it a little bit in the rub from Vicky Guerrero and was able to kind of build his career a little bit on SmackDown before the rejoining of the two brands. But it never really came together for him. And now it is one of those situations where you're looking at guys and you're looking at who to put in the main spot, and he's kind of suffering even from what Daniel Bryan was suffering from, in that there's a lot of young guys ready for that main event spot that aren't there, haven't been there as long as you have, but are the new toys that Vince McMahon and the creative team can play with. Like, there's new matchups with Ambrose in there, or there's new matchups with Seth Rollins or Bray Wyatt. Dolph Ziggler, who's wrestled everybody. You've had Dolph Ziggler, Randy Orton feud. You've even had Dolph Ziggler, John Cena feud. So it kind of falls into that situation where it's like, oh, we've already done that. And while it would be new because he's a babyface now, it's like, can we get anything new out of him? Or should we just go with somebody new and see if that clicks? It's a hard time now to be a veteran at WWE, because while they desperately need them, it's not that they don't want to book them in the right spot. It's that they're not booking veterans strongly enough because they're so focused on getting these young guys over faster compared to getting a veteran into a strong situation, so they're able to put the young guys, I think, put them over as stronger or more importantly in more important matches. Instead, they're in a very minor, narrowed mindset when it comes to the new guys. Moving on from there, let's move on a little bit to our top three. And moving on, we have our top three. It's our Valentine's Day special. We don't do it very often, but it's our top three best couples in pro wrestling history. You came up with the topic, so why don't you go first?
All right. Yeah, no, I figured that this would be a nice little Valentine's Day tie-in here when we talk about this kind of stuff. I mean, obviously you have wrestling couples and just the numerous great TV weddings that we've had over the years throughout the history of the WWE, and I think there was probably one or two in WCW too that happened. So obviously, you know, love stories in wrestling are just so well thought out and put together perfectly. But my first couple, number three on the list, is going to be Goldust and Marlena. I thought, you know, when they came out together, you always had Goldust kind of, you know, play off his, like, the homosexual tendencies, but then you had Marlena in the background, so you would always kind of be like, well, you know, Goldust and Marlena are together, and I just think that their pairing together was unique and different. I mean, Marlena, to start off, really wasn't even that much of a manager. She just kind of sat there in her little director's chair and would smoke a cigar and just sit there and watch all of Goldust's matches. I thought the pairing together worked really well, and as Goldust's character continued to grow and develop on TV, so did Marlena's, and I think that was a very strong pairing. Obviously, you know, Goldust is one of the more unique characters in wrestling history, and I think his pairing with Marlena was very well done, and the storylines that were brought up with them were good until they ended up doing the whole divorce thing, and then Goldust went off to be the artist formerly known as Goldust, and then things just got weird, and Marlena became Terry Runnels and did, you know, Pretty Mean Sisters and all that kind of weird stuff, but the initial pairing, I thought, was very well done.
Yeah, I thought Marlena and Goldust have a very niche area in their own special page in wrestling history. They did something that nobody had done before. You never had a ambiguously gay wrestler, let's just say the ambiguously gay duo, because that's the different television stuff. You never had somebody like that in pro wrestling. Yeah, you had Gorgeous George, and you had Adrian Adonis, and you had people who were kind of playing with that and kind of flirting with the homosexual tendency, but Goldust threw it in your face. Goldust was out there licking stuff and grinding on people and really shoving it down your throat. That was bad choice of words. But anyway, and then bringing in Marlena on top of it added so much to the character. And the character was moving fantastically. On the verge of winning King Kong Championship. He was having a feud with Razor Ramon, who was one of the top guys in the company. He was really making strides for himself. And then he bring in Marlena, who's his real-life wife, and pair them together. Now, Marlena had been on television before. She was a manager in WCW. She had never done something like this where it was just kind of full-on character. Before, she was wearing business suits, short skirts, and glasses, whatever. I think every woman in wrestling has donned that outfit at least once in their lives. But coming in as Marlena and coming in as this quote-unquote director to Goldust, it added that different look to them that made them stand apart from pretty much anything that was happening on television. If you go back and you look at some of the stuff they did and go back and look at her with a cigar, and look at their Raw magazine sheet that they did where they were both naked as like pieces of gold, like the Oscars. Things like that were never done. And Goldust and Marlena were able to not only do it, but make it believable, make it work, and then have him also be a threat in the ring, which didn't happen very often with these types of characters. She didn't really see these guys as being these tough or these manipulative or very good wrestlers on top of being these great mentors. So adding Marlena to his act was a great addition. I wish the Luna era never happened. I think he does too. But for the run that they had, Justin and Terry together were a very good tandem. I think they added a lot to not only to his legacy as Goldust, but in the Goldust character, but also to WWE and not only the Attitude Era history, but that pre-Attitude Era, which really launched them into it, because he was definitely one of the catalysts for it. Moving on, my number three would be an interesting one because we did bring it up a little bit. There haven't been very many couples in WCW. There was a lot more towards the end of the company's life when they were trying to add women to every wrestling act in order to bring sex appeal onto their show. But one I chose and one that had been around for a while and it was before WCW became very popular was Diamond Dallas Page and Kimberly. I think their pairing together was probably the best in WCW. And there have been a lot of tandems in WCW issues. But the way that they were able to work together, and again, this is another real-life husband and wife couple, but the way they were able to make it work where not only was Diamond Dallas Page this over-the-top, just kind of pimp-looking guy who is self-absorbed and money hungry or whatever it is and thought everything he did was great, but they added not only him showing the diamond cutter sign, but turning the diamond cutter sign and making it just holding up at 10 fingers and giving himself a 10 for pulling off a good move. And then you have the cheerleader down at ringside of Kimberly holding up a scorecard with a 10 on it. And then his opponents holding up a scorecard for like a 4 or a 2. And that's a gimmick that I thought would have played terrifically into Vandango's character when he was coming out with Summer Rae or even the dancer before her of kind of using that judging aspect, dancing with the stars that he was going with at the beginning and holding up a scorecard for that for everything he did. I think it would have added a nice wrinkle to him. It would have been good homage back to this couple that was a very strong couple and it worked too. And you always tell when a couple works really well because their split is really good. And their split actually worked very well when they broke free and had a huge feud for the television championship with Johnny B. Badd. And for WCW, a mid-card feud wasn't always one that you wanted to pay attention to. But the television title seemed to always have the good wrestlers and it's almost like those diamonds in the rough that they had on the roster. Where you saw television title matches usually between Arn Anderson, and there were fantastic ones between Arn Anderson and Ricky Steamboat. Stunning Steve Austin was a longtime television champion. He had great matches with Brian Pillman and Dustin Rhodes, and there were some fantastic television championship feuds. And Diamond Dallas Page and Johnny Badd really added to that. And having their feud over Kimberly, I'm talking before Ebad and David Sullivan, but with Ebad and Page, I think that their feud really pushed it pushed both men into a better direction for their careers and you saw Diamond Dallas Page absolutely blow up in his career, and you saw Johnny Badd have a medium success in WCW, and then have a good amount of success in WWE as well, coming in as Mark Merrill, not only winning the Intercontinental Championship, but then also having a pretty good run by himself with Sable, introducing Sable to the company, and then having a run with her and with Jackie, and actually having a pretty good career in WWF before retiring. So they're a couple together, and then being able to branch off and just having both characters go on to be have pretty good careers. And Diamond Dallas Page had a fantastic career afterwards, and him attributing a lot of his success to Kimberly, I think is a good sign of how well they worked together and how much the fans actually enjoyed them in front of the camera.
No, I agree with this one. This one was probably like, I was debating between this and Bullis and Marlena and a couple others for my number three. So this one was definitely up there for me. WCW, like we said, like, wasn't really known for too many couples. It never really pushed women and as much as the WWF did, at least, you know, well, towards their dying days, they did a little bit. But this was before that. Like you said, it does go. You know, people just remember Diamond Dallas Page and Kimberly from the NWO years when he was feuding with Macho Man, and Macho Man had Elizabeth, and BP had Kimberly, and then later on going when they ended up splitting. But like you said, this goes back farther than the Attitude Era, Monday Night War days. This goes back to his feud with Johnny B. Badd, where they were fighting over her, which she was then known as the Diamond Doll. So there's more history there than probably some wrestling fans remember. But what they should know is that, like you said, they did work on TV together very well, whether they were on opposite sides or they were on the same team. You know, Kimberly kind of worked as the night as the good-looking sidekick DDP, and the fans loved DDP because he was kind of, you know, not in the same mold as Daniel Bryan, but he was just kind of like the everyday guy, not somebody who was jacked or ridiculously ripped. He was the guy that was kind of the working man, the blue-collar guy that the fans get behind. And having Kimberly there with him at times helped out his character a little bit more. And like you said, this goes back to the early 90s, mid-90s WCW, where these two started working together. And their pairing pretty much worked from then until the end of the dying days of WCW. So I agree with this one.
Yeah, I think they're probably, while we call Sting the franchise, they're probably the first couple of WCW. You didn't really have anyone besides that stands apart as being a WCW couple. They were definitely at the forefront of that. Going on to number two, I'll give my number two since you gave your number one first. My number two has to be Vicky Guerrero and Edge. Now, you might not look at this as being one of the hottest couples in pro wrestling history. If you did, I'd kind of wonder about you. But Vicky Guerrero and Edge had a lot, and had a lot going for them, and they are a big part of WWE. I think when you look back on SmackDown history, and you look back at some of the best things that happened on SmackDown, you're going to see these two right at the forefront of it. They were fantastic together. Their chemistry was undeniable. And this, you got to remember, too, was when Vicky Guerrero was brand new to being in front of the camera. She had been on camera once before, with the WWE and with Eddie Guerrero, and that was for a very, very short custody battle for Rey Mysterio's son between Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio. It was bad. It was not something that a lot of people want to remember, but that was Vicky's first taste of being in front of the camera. If you had just seen her then and never saw her ever again, but learned that she had been on WWE for as many years as she had been, you'd be really questioning what people like about WWE. She was terrible. And when she got down and when she was paired up with Edge, she didn't have much going for her. He had the nostalgia of an Eddie Guerrero connection and people missing Eddie and wanting to see him on television. So they respected Vicky, and they appreciated her being on television, but that was pretty much the extent of what they knew about her and what they cared to know about her. Bring an Edge, and it was just instant magic. I don't know what it is about the two of them together, but it was literally a heat-seeking missile, and they could do nothing right. Everything that they did, the fans wanted to boo out of the building and not go away, boo. This was, I can't believe this is happening. This is amazing, but awful type of boo. The whole, the family, the having the Edgeheads and Chavo Guerrero and Bam Neely and the people that they had together for their little family stable, supporting Edge and him getting the world championship and her being the assistant commissioner and then the assistant general manager and then finally the general manager and then worming their way into that. Then him convincing her to marry him and getting all into that and cheating on her like he's done everybody else and kind of having that whole video evidence, which they've always done. It was very entertaining and much more entertaining than I think a lot of people expected going into. So Vic Euro and Edge, I think, are probably one of the top couples in WWE history. And probably two of the top performers. I think those are two people also that succeeded more as a couple than they ever did by themselves.
Yeah, I agree with this one again, too. Vicky Guerrero, like you said, she had her brief appearance on there with, like you said, the very terrible Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio storyline. And when, you know, you saw her get brought back on TV, you're like, oh, what's she going to do now? And then she gets pairing with Edge, and you just saw, I think, throughout it, you saw Vicky get more and more comfortable on TV playing her character, growing into her character, expanding it more, because she had somebody like Edge who has been around for a while and probably worked with her and was able to, like, you know, you're able to figure out what worked and what didn't. And it's the classic, you know, evil heel general manager who has the favorite heel wrestler, except this time they were a couple, so she wanted him to succeed more. So I agree with this, and like you said, it was nice to see Vicky grow, and this pairing helped Vicky not only when it happened, but long term it helped just, you know, expand her character, get more comfortable on the mic, and then even after this ended, she still was, like you said, a heat-seeking missile. All she had to do was open her mouth, and she would still get booed to this day. I mean, I don't know about now that she's kind of retired, and maybe if she came back once, she'd need a nice pop. But you know that the second she would say, excuse me, she would get booed. And you go back to, like, you know, kind of when did she start growing into her role, and you can, like, pretty much pinpoint this Edge-Vicky Guerrero relationship as that starting point that helped launch her career as a heel authority figure and become one of the biggest heat generators in, you know, WWE's last 5 to 10 years.
Yep, and let's go on to your number two.
For my number two, we kind of briefly talked about it earlier, and it's the same era as Goldust and Marlena, and I'm going to go with Sable and Mark Merrill. And here's a guy, Mark Merrill, just brought in to the WWF. He gets his first, you know, interaction was with kind of saving Sable from Triple H after WrestleMania 12, and these two become a pairing. They were a very good pairing to start, and it kind of helped both of them. You know, you saw Sable get more of a spotlight as time went on, and Mark Merrill became kind of more jealous of her. And then, you know, Sable's, you know, kind of sex appeal fit that attitude era greatly. And I think together they worked the best when you had Sable trying to, you know, do her thing and, you know, please the fans. And then you had Mark Merrill trying to be covered up and try to take the spotlight for himself. And the one thing that disappointed me a little about this, I've always thought Mark Merrill himself was kind of underutilized in the WWF. I would have liked to see him get a bigger role, and I really think he could have been a bigger heel after this breakup if they would have maybe kept them interacting more. But I just wish you would have seen that breakup kind of push Merrill into the heel spotlight and get more of a push going forward. That's my only little gripe about this one, but I think on screen together they work very well, and I thought the extended breakup between the two where you had Merrill trying to win back some of the spotlight while Sable kept hogging it was very well done. So that's why these two are my number two couple on the list.
Yeah, like you said, we talked about it a little bit. Merrill and Sable are another one of those couples that not only were they real-life couples, but they had a lot of issues before they got on screen. So when they got on stream and stuff started going down, it was only a matter of time. Ironically, when they kind of broke up on stream, also correlated with what was going on behind the scenes. I don't know if it was because of Sable's success, and her success was far and away bigger than I think anybody remembers. And that's another woman that we might be looking at soon for the Hall of Fame. I will not be surprised if it's this year or next year, especially with her husband, Brock Lesnar, being more involved with the WWE. Not only or not, they're asking her maybe if Brock Lesnar's open to it. I don't know if he would be or not, because there would be a lot more footage of her being broadcast across television than she is the mother of their children. But Sable's career skyrocketed, and her popularity reached something I don't think anybody has seen in pro wrestling ever. It was unbelievable. I had never seen it before. I didn't truly get it just because I'm not big into the bleach blonde plastic look, but I understood it. I didn't get it. I didn't understand why it was that big. I guess you could say she was the Pamela Anderson of the WWE. I think that's a fair assumption. When that popularity just jumped off, Mark Marrow was sitting at home holding the bag. He was the one that was bringing luggage home after a week of television because she had to go out and do more TV, do more press and more signings and book releases and anything you could think of. Whereas Mero is just a kind of house show guy. Mark Mero, like you said, he was a guy who was very good in the ring. He was very talented. He knew how to get over. He knew what to do. He knew how to piss off fans, and he knew how to get fans to cheer for him. It just so happened he had a very hot wife. So those type of things kind of suck when you're going into a business like pro wrestling, because you're trying to get as over as possible for yourself. But if you have to do that by bringing in somebody else, you run that risk, that person becoming more popular than you, and then your stuff kind of in the shadow. That's exactly what happened to Mark Marrow. He obviously couldn't handle it very well, and a lot of stuff happened, and he was never heard from again. I wish he did get a little bit more of a run. It was unfortunate that he did it, but I'm glad that you're able to look back and you know where Mark Marrow's history is in wrestling, and you know what he did in wrestling. A lot of that for a lot of people is going to be that he introduced Sable. But for those people, okay, whatever. For me, I thought he was a great editor. And hopefully sometime down the line we'll be able to maybe hear about him or see him a little bit more if WCW, if that becomes a little bit more resurgent and people actually watch some of his matches. I think they'll be pleasantly surprised. Let's move on to our number ones, and I know we're going to have some honorable mentions. I thought of a couple just sitting here listening to these, but let's get your number one first.
For my number one, I'm going to go with Edge and Lita, to me. I know we just thought about Edge and Vicky Guerrero earlier.
See?
You know, Edge and
now,
Lita.
Okay, wait, hold on a second. Hold on, I'm going to interrupt you. Now, you sent me a message this afternoon, and just like, okay, the person, we need to rule out Macho Man over this. That makes sense. I mean, they're considered the first couple of pro wrestling. So you want to rule them out? I said, no, it's not a big deal. We have a lot of people to choose from. We can have them. And then you go ahead and choose my number one as yours. That's just not cool. I saw for certain that it was like, okay, well, you can choose Macho Man Elizabeth, so you choose Macho Man Elizabeth. Bastard, you go ahead and just steal my number one without even saying anything and just flat out, that's just blatant.
Go ahead, talk about whatever.
I have a 1B. I'll go with my 1B. Just know that you suck.
I guess I misunderstood your message when you said I don't need to exclude it. I thought that, I don't know, I guess I just misunderstood that from what we were talking about. But,
Edge
and Lita, you know, it basically started from something that happened in real life, where you had Lita and where both of them were kind of cheating on their respective, you know, boyfriends or spouses, whatever it was, behind their back. You know, Mito was obviously Matt Hardy, and I think Edge was married at the time. They cheated on each other. They were cheating on the road, and then it got wind of it. Matt Hardy was released. He complained about it. You know, the fans got wind of it. They started booing Lita on TV because they knew what had happened. So they actually, you know, the WWE smartened up. They turned her heel. They paired her with Edge. And both of them just embraced the role that they were given and played it off perfectly. I mean, Lita pretty much, you know, not this isn't going to be a PC term, but Lita pretty much brought out her inner slut in herself and pretty much played up that character to a T. You know, she dressed kind of more sleazy. Her and Edge obviously had
kind
live sex
sleazy.
Celebration. What was that?
I said kind of more sleazy. To quote Jerry Lawler, there is more fabric on a sock than there was that she's wearing on Raw every week.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely true. Like you said, they had a live sex celebration on Raw after Edge won the title. And, you know, Lita obviously wasn't afraid to get involved in matches. You look at the WrestleMania 22 match Edge had with Mick Foley. She got involved with that match. Their pairing together just helped Edge. I mean, Edge was getting over enough as a heel as it was, but you just added Lita with him, and the heat just grew immensely. I think Edge would have become a star no matter what in the WWE, but his pairing with Lita to help him finally get that main event heel push, I thought was just the right pairing at the right time. And obviously, morally-wise, it came about from the wrong circumstances, but it just happened to turn into some great TV, and they just made a great on-air pairing together. And I just think their chemistry was so well and so such greatly done that they obviously had to be remembered for being probably the top heel. Well, I don't know. I don't want to say top heel company, a top heel couple of all time, but they definitely they embraced everything that happened in their personal lives and used it to get themselves over on TV. And it just happened to be the best pairing and best usage for both of them possible.
Yeah, Edge and Lita, I think they were the benchmark of what it comes to be a sleazy couple. They were able to throw it in your face better than I think anybody has ever done. As much as you loved them, you hated them. And as much as you hated them, you loved them. And they were able to grate on every nerve and push every button perfectly. I mean, there's not many people that could go into a feud with John Cena and not only get him over as being a strong babyface, but come away as being a heel that people want to see fight other people. Edge and Lita were able to do that for each other. I mean, they were able to just boost each other's star power to incredible levels. Lita, I mean, before that, had a very, very good game for herself. She had really put herself on the map and was able to say, okay, I'm a great women's wrestler. Thing I've done in my career, this is who I am. And while she was great at that and she was Team Extreme and everything else, she never really had that personality. Bring in Edge, let Edge, who already had a little bit of that sweetness going on. He had that heel turn where he turned on Shawn Michaels, and he had a little bit going forward with that after winning Money in the Bank, and kind of being that kind of smarty heel that cheats pretty much every chance he could get, and throwing in some leave in there and throwing in this abrasive, rude, offensive, overly sexual of them were able to just bring this part out of them that not only were they like 100 times more out there than they were before, but fans were able to connect with them more because they were sleazy. They had this real life thing that went on where they both cheated. And they cheated on a friend of theirs, a very close friend. And both of them came out looking the bad guy. And it helped that they were playing bad guys. So coming out looking as a bad guy wasn't that bad. they were able just to use it. And they used it to the best of their ability. And I think without the pairing of them together, I don't think we'd be seeing them in the Hall of Fame like they are now.
No, I think Lita, I think you could make the case for. I think they would have put Lita in regardless because they wanted to do the Team Extreme tie-in and whatnot. But I can see Lita, like you said, she did get added personality when she got this pairing with Edge. Before that, Lita was just kind of known as a woman who could wrestle decently in the ring and wasn't afraid to take risks in there compared to what we were used to seeing from women's wrestling at that time frame. But this pairing, like you said, definitely added Edge to the character, which we had never really seen before. I mean, she was always kind of this, you know, played off as this extreme kind of girl who was paired with the Hardys, but we never really heard her talk. We never really heard her do much else. But when you had her paired with Edge, it seemed like something just flipped the switch in her, and she all of a sudden became this completely different person that we had been used to seeing the previous 5 years before that.
Yeah, I think I think Lita would have been more of a conversation piece than she would have been a sure ballot Hall of Famer. I think, like you said, for the Team Extreme thing, but also look at Matt and Jeff Hardy are nowhere near the Hall of Fame. So I think there would have been more of a conversation than it would actually a Hall of Fame for her. I mean, you also got to remember, too, her best work as women's champion happened after this as well. Her final feud with Trish and going off of that. Going into my number one, since you already chose my original number one, I'll go with my 1B. Just honorable mention I want to throw in first is just when we don't even need to talk about it. And it's two people we've already talked about so far, and that's Eddie Guerrero and China. It's just watching a mashup of Chris Jericho and Eddie Guerrero and seeing the whole Mama Sita storyline. It was pretty fantastic and something that is forgot about a lot, especially considering the performers involved and the great things that he went on to do later in his career. But my number one it has to be Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. While you said you were going to say the Trish and Lita are the best heel couple ever, these two are the best heel couple ever. They not only are two of the most important people in wrestling today, but 15 years ago, they were probably the best heel pairing of a female and a male in a long time. The McMahon-Helmsley era on Monday Night Raw was fantastic and led to Triple H's first world championship and was able to propel both of them into this just pantheon of great main event performers and great talkers and great segments and feuds and all of this going on. I mean, having them together, The Rock, with Big Show and all of these main event performers that before he was kind of on the cusp of, but getting in there with Stephanie, and next thing you know, he's having title matches with Austin and Mankind on SummerSlam with Jesse Ventura, who was the governor of Minnesota at the time, as the special referee. I don't think you would have really seen that happen if he didn't get that final nudge and that final push of being married to the boss's daughter. And there's no better storyline than that. Like, this is the real-life daughter of the owner of the company. And you go on and you marry her, and not only do you marry her in a very sleazy and unlawful way, but then you reveal that she was in on it the whole time, and it was all a ploy to screw over her father. It was done perfectly. They had fantastic chemistry that I don't think anybody expected. And they are able to portray that not only into a successful on-screen pairing, but they got married. They have a beautiful family, and they're now running the biggest wrestling company in the world and have brought back their on-screen characters that you essentially played when you were kids to now do them again and still achieve the same level of success that you had beforehand. I think is incredible, and I don't think anybody could even fathom doing something like that when they did it. And the fact that it's still going in today's environment compared to the Attitude Era, I think is a great testament to both performers and their versatility as performers. and their chemistry and their connection with the audience that I don't think anybody has been able to touch.
Yeah, I like your point how you said, you know, 15 years from when the initial pairing of these two started, they can be placed on TV today and they still get the heat that they got during the Attitude Era. I remember when this happened, I was very leery of it. I was like, well, you know, Stephanie McMahon's kind of just played this, you know, innocent boss's daughter. I'm curious to see how she's going to expand into this role and end up seeing what's happening. And she just completely blew me away as far as, and kind of like Lita, you know, you didn't know she had this in her, and she just completely embraced this inner heel character going against her dad, playing up the whole thing with Triple H, talking about how dad mistreated her. And it was just so well done that I remember at the time just being completely surprised at how well she was able to pull this off. And her heat has pretty much never gone away ever since then. She is still one of the most hated on-screen characters in wrestling today. And it's simply amazing. It goes to the characteristic of Stephanie McMahon, who's somebody who's been around in this business for so long that she knows how to keep her character going and have it not get stale at all whatsoever. Even when she was on her own as a general manager of SmackDown, she still made that work too. So there's just so much to like about Stephanie McMahon as an on-screen evil heel character that you just go back to when this pairing started and you just get completely, if you were to start from when Stephanie McMahon was brought onto TV and just watch that whole year and a half, probably less than that, when she turned heel and embraced everything that was going on and started playing the heel character, you would be shocked. You just didn't think she had that in her. And like you said, similar to how Lita helped Edge, you know, Stephanie McMahon pairing with Triple H, that helped Triple H's momentum and gave him even more, gave the fans even more of a reason to boo him and hate him for everything that he had done. So that's why, like, when I was talking about Edge and Lita, I kind of hesitated with calling them the best heel pairing of all time, because I do think that these two are right up there with them. I would have no problem with somebody arguing that they're the best. I mean, I think it's a very toss-up. I would prefer Edge and Lita, but Triple H and Stephanie McMahon are just, like you said, the fact that from 2000 to now, they're still on TV and nobody seems to complain like they do with Kane or the Big Show, who've been around in that long. And obviously, it's a different kind of scenario, but still, it just goes, it's a testament to them that shows how much they know the business, how much they can adapt their characters into being what they are and how they can still be relevant on TV today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've talked forever about them. I think they really will not only go down as fantastic on-screen characters in their own right, but I think they'll go down as one of the most memorable couples in wrestling history, right up there with Macho Man and Elizabeth. I think that's how memorable and how over they are as a couple. Third show, we're looking at a little bit of time before Raw, so we can actually get set up, catch our breath, and get ready for Monday Night Raw just a week before the WWE Fastlane pay-per-view. Was there anything, Justin, that you wanted to talk about before we duck out for the evening?
No, not really. I am looking forward. I've been keeping up with the results. I haven't watched any of it recently, unfortunately, but I am looking forward to the NXT special this week, this Wednesday. We got, you know, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens finally going at it, so that should be fun. And these shows are normally always good shows, so it's one thing. But this has been kind of reading the results. I haven't really watched any of the shows. I've caught clips here and there, but I am looking forward to once again watching this NXT show on Wednesday.
Yes, NXT is always a good investment. If you don't have a WWE network, that's definitely something that is a big selling point for them. And whenever they have their specials, it's something that people want to see because of not only the product and the storylines that they're able to put together down in Florida, but also the in-ring talent and being able to see these guys before they get up to the WWE main roster and start getting into that WWE flow and that overwork mentality. Down here, they're a little bit more refreshed and they're able to hone their craft a little bit better. So it's always a good tune in anytime that they have one of their specials, and that is this Wednesday. But for tonight, we will be back next week. We'll be previewing WWE Fastlane. getting into our predictions. Hopefully tonight we'll be able to see a little bit more of the direction they might be going in. There's a lot of things happened last week that kind of sped up everything that should be happening this week and going into the pay-per-view. So maybe we'll get a little bit more clue into what's going to be happening, and we can talk more about it next week going into the final pay-per-view before WrestleMania 41. Until that time, though, and that will be next Monday night at 6 p.m., again, you can always reach us at thewrestlingpulsecast@gmail.com, or you can call us the next week at 818-522-9786. Always looking to talk to you. Always looking to answer questions, have strong discussions. But for Justin Tuwanka, I'm Matt Herrick. That's our Valentine's Day edition of the Wrestling Pulsecast. We will see you all next Monday. Let's get to that. Let's take your night down.